From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Healing is Voltage with Dr. Jerry Tennant. Later, joined by Dr. Mark Starr. Here's what's happening. A storm brewing in the Caribbean brought the deep sea effort to plug the ruptured oil well to a near standstill just as BP was getting ready, they say, to close in on for the kill. Work on the relief well, now just days from completion, was suspended. And the cap that has been keeping the oil bottled up since last week may have to be reopened, allowing crude to gush into the sea again for some days, according to retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, the government's point man on the crisis. And a new joint venture formed by four of the world's biggest oil companies will develop a rapid response system for deepwater oil spills in the Gulf. Exxon, Shell, Chevron, ConocoPhillips will each contribute 25% to a $1 billion company that would be able to mobilize a response within 24 hours to capture and contain deep sea oil spills. BP, whose blown-out well has leaked as much as 180 million gallons of oil into the Gulf, is not included in the venture, but may, along with some other companies, be able to use the strike force. Captain Kelly Sweeney, of course, the master mariner with us. Captain Sweeney, the storm now is going to take us. It just doesn't end, does it?
No, it doesn't, George. Ahoy to you and all the listeners. And yes, as you said, the storm is a consideration. Actually, right now there are two storms that are brewing down in the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean. One is off the coast of Mexico and heading towards Texas. The other is, as you said, off of Haiti, and it's moving towards the Deepwater Horizon spill area. And both are possibly going to turn into tropical cyclones in the next 48 hours. I got word 3 hours ago that even the largest oil spill cleanup ships have now headed into port, and skimming operations have stopped in anticipation of this.
Okay, best case scenario, this relief well that they're getting very close now does the trick, stops the spill, the pressure, you know, doesn't seep out anyplace else. That's best case scenario. Worst case scenario, Kelly, this thing doesn't work. Then what?
Well, then we go to plan B, which is relief well number two. And if that doesn't work, and they're tentatively saying that plan C is to hook up some way the well itself and try to draw the oil out into an adjacent rig somewhere in the area. And that's just
forever and ever and ever? Is that what they would have to do?
That's what they would have to do for quite a long time, yes.
All right.
And also, George, I have some other news for the listeners.
What's up?
Out of the hearings, the Joint Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, U.S. Coast Guard hearings in Louisiana, today all the Transocean employees who were on that rig, the Deepwater Horizon, the night that the disaster began, refused to testify, every one of them. Now, tomorrow, the hearings may resume, but, hey, there's no guarantee, and right now everything is up in the air.
Okay, Kelly, thanks. Now, here's some good news for you if you've been unemployed and your benefits have run out. They may kick back in soon. State unemployment agencies are gearing up to resume sending unemployment payments to millions of people as Congress moves now to send President Barack Obama a measure to restore lapsed benefits. After months of increasingly bitter stalemate, the Senate passed the measure, and President Obama has promised to quickly sign the legislation into law once the House takes a final vote on Thursday. Under the best-case scenarios, unemployed people who have been denied jobless benefits because of a bipartisan Senate standoff over renewing them can expect retroactive payments as early as next week in some states. Now, in some other states, it could take longer. So if you're concerned about this, you might want to call your state employment agency and find out when you'll be getting your money. President Obama has signed into law the most sweeping overhaul of lending and high finance rules since the Great Depression, adding safeguards for millions of consumers and aiming to restrain Wall Street excesses that could set off a new recession. The president's signing ceremony capped nearly 2 years of intense debate over how to avoid a recurrence of the 2008 financial meltdown. And the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, he has a dire assessment of the U.S. recovery. It hit the stocks His comment that the economy faced unusually uncertain prospects rattled investors. Stocks tumbled after Bernanke acknowledged that the labor market's continued weakness, while offering very few specific options to stimulate lending and investment. In a moment, Catherine Austin Fitz joins us for the entire hour with your calls. We'll talk about all of that. The social network giant Facebook has registered its 500 millionth member. The site, which launched in 2004, has gained around 100 million new users in the last 6 months. Facebook said the number was an important milestone and added that it was humbled and inspired by the stories of its users. Federal health officials are barring new patients from enrolling in a safety study of GlaxoSmithKline's controversial diabetes pill, Avendia, a week after a panel of experts ruled that the drug increases heart risks. The city of Oakland, California, has legalized large-scale marijuana cultivation for medical use and will issue up to 4 permits for industrial cultivation starting next year. The move by the San Francisco Bay Area City aims to bring medical marijuana cultivation into the open and allow the city to profit by taxing those who grow it. Christopher Nolan's new film, Inception, is a blockbuster with brains. Even its star, Leonardo DiCaprio, admits it's not a script he managed to grasp the first time around. He said it took him multiple reads, but it finally made sense to him when he sat down with Chris Nolan. Inception is Nolan's sci-fi follow-up to his Batman epic, The Dark Knight, which has made more than $1 billion at the box office. Inception sees DiCaprio as Dom Cobb, the leader of a team of thieves who raid secrets from other people's dreams. Should be pretty successful. Up next, Catherine Austin Fitz. We can only dream that we're going to get out of this economic mess. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our financial guru, Catherine Austin Fitz, this hour. Catherine, it's about time we spend an hour together. How are you?
I know. It's wonderful, George. I was delighted to hear that I was going to be doing this.
Yeah. You know, I like the little news clips you do for us, but these hours are very important. It gives our listeners an opportunity to talk with you, too.
Although we have to, this. You know, in the future, we have to talk about things that are more optimistic and hopeful than this
Oh, my gosh. I mean, when you talk about the oil leak and the economic mess, who knows what. Let's start, first of all, with this historic financial overhaul bill that the president has signed into law. What the heck does this mean to us?
Well, you know, this means that the United States is now about to become the world's most expensive toll booth.
Yeah. And we're the ones dropping the money in the toll, I bet.
We're talking about thousands of pages, so it's very broad in scope. It reforms or impacts a great deal of the different financial laws and impacts all the regulators. We used to have a joke in Washington that says everybody's going to stop enforcing and start having turf wars. The Chamber of Commerce now predicts that this will require the issuance of 533 different regulations on very important topics. So, you know, 533 regulations, sure, that's a huge amount of work involving, you know, thousands of bureaucrats and lots of lobbyists in Congress. So the next 2 years and what the health care bill is not driving crazy, this will drive crazy.
Oh, and that thing hasn't even hit yet. Wait till that comes out.
Well, here's the scary thing. If you look at a lot of the different areas, for example, bank holding companies or derivatives, or this bill authorizes a lot and gives a lot more central power to a variety of different agencies, particularly the Federal Reserve Bank. But it's very general, and what a person subject to it would say is arbitrary and capricious. And so until the regulations can come out, a lot of people are sort of frozen and don't know which way it's going to go. So, you know, we've created this huge law that kind of leaves everybody in suspense, and then you're going to have these regulations coming out over the next 2 years. So it's quite a I remember when I was in the first Bush administration and there was a huge scandal. It was the end of the last housing bubble, so everybody said, oh, let's get together and write a big bill. And it was really funny. We ended up with a couple hundred pages in the first draft, and somebody came to me and said, look, you've got to do something. This thing is a mess. And I had really a great team of deputies who were very good at business and securities and credit. So I sent them in and I said, look, here are the 25 things we really need to get done. Just get everything else deleted and get it cleaned up. And it's almost as though there was no one there to delete it back to, you know, what was really important. And I'll tell you what the big problem is, George, and let me use a metaphor. If somebody stole your money, if somebody broke into your house and stole your money, I would say what we need to do is identify the theft, get the money back, and put the thief in jail. Right?
And cut off his hands.
I'm not sure, you know, there's a...
That may be a little extreme, but it does work in Saudi Arabia.
Right, but imagine if they stole your money, we didn't identify who did it, we didn't get the money back, we didn't put them in jail. Instead, we wrote this huge complex bill on the theory that it's not going to happen again. Well, of course, that's ridiculous, because crime that pays is crime that stays.
That's right.
We have a couple thousand pages of legislation from the federal government, and nowhere does it mention the fact that to date the federal government has not, since 1995, as required by law, produced audited financial statements. $4 trillion plus is missing from the federal accounts. It hasn't figured out where the money went and got it back. It's given out $12 trillion in bailouts. I mean, we're talking about a completely out-of-control, non-accountable system. We even have the Washington Post now writing huge investigation pieces about the secret, secret America. And that's really about a secret economy, because if you look at employment...
Which we've been talking about for years.
I mean, it was really funny. When I saw it, I said, oh, my God, you know, the Washington Post is now trying to get some market share back from coast to coast. But, you know, basically they're talking about the black budget, and you have been talking about it for years. And the reality, the black budget is, you know, overtaking the whole economy. And we now have a huge black hole in the economy. And you know, unless we grapple with that. Anyways, the bottom line on this legislation, and we can go into many more details, but, you know, the problem, the housing bubble and the derivatives bubble and the so-called financial crisis, which I call the financial coup d'etat, came about for a couple reasons. One is that the economy is way over-centralized, and you have insiders with a much lower cost of capital,
right,
who are playing, you know, fast and fancy, you know, footloose with the federal credit.
And making a fortune doing it.
And making a fortune doing it. And part of the problem is the federal, you know, the National Security Council is dependent on Wall Street to implement the sort of national agenda in terms of economic warfare, and so that gives them huge amounts of inside information, and, you know, they're arrogant and out of control. So you have all these fundamental structural issues that need to be addressed, and this bill doesn't address any of them. It avoids addressing them. It's almost like, okay, let's make up more rules for the people who have no power, because we can't deal, you know, with the scary guys who have the guns and live in the secret economy. So what, you know, we've done is we've provided for more centralization. I mean, we've given vast new powers to the Federal Reserve in ways that are unbelievably arbitrary and capricious if you read the language as it now stands. And, you know, that was the problem. The housing bubble was forced on America top down by the federal government, the Federal Reserve, and Wall Street.
Okay, now, one good news. Looks like the jobless payments are going to go to people who need it, the unemployed.
Yeah, it was really funny. I think finally they realized, you know, if you tank that whole group, the ramifications to a whole variety, you know, the housing market and everything else is going to be bad news for everybody.
So you're talking about, I think, some civil unrest. If you keep pushing people, you paint them against the wall, I mean, they're going to fight back. But you force them to stay there, you got a problem.
Well, you have a problem, and this gets back to the financial reform bill. You have a problem, and I'm seeing it where I live, George. I'm seeing it sort of people standing up and saying, that's it, I've had it. You know, I'm not – this kind of intrusive action by government is shutting down the economy. Because all the jobs since 1985, other than what's come from the military, has come from small business.
That's right.
And if you look at what's going on in the economy, including this bill, it's doing a huge amount of stuff. You know, the toll booth applies to the small guy and small business. And the small guy says, look, I'm not going to carry you guys anymore. You know, you got $12 trillion. That was enough to pay off all the mortgages in the country. I just, you know, I'm not going to do it anymore. So you're watching fundamental lack of faith in the system. And so, you know, it's getting we're grinding down, and we're getting down to the cash flow issues of, am I going to feed my family, or am I going to pay more in taxes when the tax money is going to a system that's not credible?
See, I don't think the shakeout has really occurred yet. I think this economy is being propped up, unlike what happened in 2008 when we got the rabbit punch. I think now it's being falsely propped up, and if it goes, it's really going to go this time.
Well, I don't think it has to go. And unfortunately, you know, this gets back to, we have now, we're running a financial mechanism, which is financing a global currency. And we have a military that literally is holding that dollar up. I mean, we're shifting from a sovereign nation to a global empire, and it's based on force. It's based on this secret economy, and it's based on our weaponry, including our invisible weaponry. And we've built a global taxation system. And essentially what we do is we print paper or securities, and then we force other people to buy them, and then they go down 5% in value. And it's a taxation system through the balance sheet. And it's really a military question, George, of whether we can continue it. And if we can, and again, that's a military question, then this can go on forever. But what's going to happen is you're going to have the outsiders constantly eviscerated. Because if you look at the, you know, if you look at the state of the rich are getting richer. I mean, the rich had a great
hugely.
Year last year.
Yes.
They're having a great year this year.
Banner year.
Right. And in fact, if you go back, there's up on my blog, there's a wonderful video I always recommend to people by Sir James Goldsmith. And it's an interview he did with Charlie Rose in 1994. And he basically said, look, if we adopt the Uruguay round of GATT and do the World Trade Organization, everything that's planned, you know, we're going to have massive unemployment in Europe and the United States. This is insane. We're going to destroy not only the first world, but we're going to have massive unemployment because all the, you know, we're going to put 2 to 3 billion of small farmers out of business, and we're going to have massive dislocation globally. This is basically insane, and it's not. It's one of the things he's saying, and I've always said, is it doesn't optimize the equity and economy. I mean, it's really funny. One of my favorite sort of economic experts is Franklin Sanders, who's here in Tennessee, and he says that wealth is what comes from what people take out of the ground. And, you know, I'm looking at this almost 2,000-page bill, and I'm thinking, wealth does not come from writing more rules.
No, not at all. So a friend of mine was looking at a condo in Las Vegas. It was sold 2 years ago for $500,000. It's been foreclosed on. It's put up by the bank for $170,000, and there are still no takers.
Right.
How low can it go?
Well, you know, real estate, if the people who live in the real estate have no income and no small businesses and no jobs, then the real estate has no value.
There's none.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
It's what somebody wants to pay for.
Right. So, it was funny. When I was Assistant Secretary of Housing, that we had a town in New Mexico where 70% of the mortgages were in default and owned by FHA, Freddie and Fannie. And my staff brought it to me, and I said, look, tell the town to buy the mortgages. And they said, well, the town doesn't have any mortgages, have any money. I said, well, I'm from Wall Street. We never had any money. We just created an entity and swapped stock. I said, so tell them to, you know, create a development, economic development entity. I don't know what the structure should be. And we'll swap them stock for the mortgages because they need to reinvent the town. And that's an equity. You need equity. You don't need more debt to do that. You need equity. And if you're going to reinvent yourself, then, you know, you might as well all create some stock, and that's what's got to happen in America. And unfortunately, this bill and where the Obama administration has taken us is they've basically gone in a different direction. They're using, you know, essentially they're using that, George, not as a financial system but as a control system. The idea is get everybody completely in hock or bankrupt, and then they have to do what you say.
Yep, absolutely. Sounds like a plan, doesn't it?
Well, I was just in the City of London, and it was phenomenal. We had my hotel was right next to Liverpool Station, and there was a fire, and I ended up in the middle of the night out on the street with, you know, just hundreds of bankers. You can imagine. Well, it was fascinating because they were from all over the world, and I started talking to them about the markets, and the Chinese Ag Bank was doing its IPO, and it was reported to go very, doing very well. And I was sitting on the stairs at this, you know, next to the intersection with this fascinating Australian banker, and he was on a roadshow for an IPO of an Australian company. And I said, "How's it going?" He said, "It's dead." He said, "The IPO market's dead." And I said, "Well, the ag bank's doing." He said, "It's not going as well as they're saying." He said, "There is no equity market. The only equity market are the central banks."
Yeah, that's true. Catherine, stay with us. We're going to be back in just a moment with you, and we'll take phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, it's called Healing is Voltage with Dr. Jerry Tennant. We're going to talk about some incredible things that electricity, that voltage does to your body. We'll be back in a moment with Catherine Austin Fitz and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke kept things a little at bay today and didn't say some positive things, and the market took a little punch.
That surprised, you know, it kind of surprises me that he couldn't find anything positive. Although, you know, Ben being honest would be always welcome.
Yeah, that would be. When?
You know, I wanted to say there are some bright spots in this legislature. You know, I always try to find the positive. But one of them is there's lobbying now to get Elizabeth Warren made head of the Consumer Protection Agency. Putting it inside of the Federal Reserve, to me, is absolutely nuts. It's kind of, you know, like putting the devil in charge of your new school. But anyway, but Elizabeth Warren is one of the bright lights in the whole sort of financial reform process. And she has the knowledge, George, and the background so that if she gets put in that position, you know, at least some things will get done in the next 2 years. I mean, she certainly has the smarts to get the – we really don't need more law. There's plenty of law in the books to enforce. You don't need more law to stop the fraudulent inducement of America and all sorts of the predatory lending. But, you know, to have someone of her quality could make a difference. That's one of the bright lights. Another bright light is Gary Gensler, who's the chairman of the CFTC, and the challenge in the derivatives regulation, which is very important and one of the places we really do need more transparency and regulation, is that it's got to be global. It's going to require a lot of coordination. And one of the things the legislation does is authorize the CFTC to do that sort of global coordination. And so it'll be interesting to see what Gensler can come up with. But
have you seen also where the government's going to try to track gold transactions now?
Well, this you're talking about the 1099 provision,
which was in the Healthcare Act. That's right.
It's much worse. You know, for some reason, everybody's lobbed onto it in terms of the gold. But and we wrote a special Solari report about this. So if you go to my blog and just do Healthcare Act, you'll pull up the story about 1099s. What the law did, George, and it was part of the revenue raising, was it said from now, starting in 2012, and again, the regulations haven't been promulgated. This is another place where the regulations can make an enormous difference. Any business paying $600 or more for anything has to give a 1099. Now, when I tell you this is the paperwork blizzard of all time, I mean, you can't imagine what this is going to do to small business. It's kind of like the, you know, shut down all small business provision. But can you imagine every time, you know, I run three businesses, we're going to have to, for everything we pay more than $600 out, we're going to have to write a 1099. Now, it hurts precious metals dealers because obviously a lot of dealers are working with people who want privacy. And a 1099, when they sell their precious metals back, is going to, you know, it's going to put an incredible damper.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Let's take some calls here. Dave in Chico, California. Go ahead, David. You're up.
Hi. I was wondering if you could tell me, when will the American people wake up and realize that our politicians are nothing but liars, thieves, and criminals, and this government is nothing but a criminal enterprise? Are we a nation of sheep, or will we ever repudiate these two corrupt criminal political parties?
Well, I think most people know this already. You know, 10 years ago, they knew that the corruption was bad. They just thought the corruption wouldn't cut into their piece of the action. Now they...
Or affect them.
Right, or affect them. And now they see that it does, and there's a real fundamental change going on. And the reality is there are millions of Americans who've tried to do things and who've expended tremendous amounts of time. You know, I cannot tell you how many people over the last 10 years that I know personally have been assassinated. Lives have been threatened. Their family members' lives have been threatened. They've been poisoned. They've been, targeted with litigation. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of things. But the reality is, if you look at the control systems that are in place, both formal and informal, they're very invasive. They're very significant. And people are very scared. And the question for many of them is, what can I do that is, one, effective, and two, where I can organize with other people to do it? And the reality is, if you look at the nature of the economic problem, it's not just Washington and Wall Street. Our entire society is dependent on the cash flows of organized crime and warfare. We're all complicit in this. George, you've heard my red button story. Dave, in California, if you're interested, go to my blog and put in red button story and you'll pull up the whole story. But it's really about our dependency, and that goes down to a county level, because America just breaks down to 3,100 counties. And the reality is that part of it is people are afraid of the secret government because it's very dangerous, much more dangerous than is, portrayed in the media, number one. But number two, we're economically dependent on the secret government right now. The secret government is the one running around the world, making the whole world, provide us with the subsidy that keeps our way of life up. So we're complicit and we're dependent, and it's a deeper problem, and it's going to take action at every one of 3,100 counties, because the corruption is not just in Washington and Wall Street; it's in every county.
It's all over the place. I mean, when you look at what's happening worldwide, Putin wants to stay in power forever. Chavez wants to stay in power forever. Castro has stayed in power forever. It's no different here.
It's just like Lord of the Rings. Nobody wants to give up the ring.
No, not at all. I mean, the Saudi kings and princes, they've been there forever. In Kuwait, they've been there forever. And nobody wants to leave when they're in the chair.
Well, that's why, George, if you look at the things we need to do to bring real lasting reform, one of the most important is transparency. And I think one of the most hopeful things that's happened in the last 2 months is the bills that Iceland has passed trying to create, they're trying to reinvent themselves as one of the real locations of real transparency. It's one of the reasons I love Coast to Coast. I mean, it's perfect on Secret America. You were the guys who told that story first, again, foremost for years, and that's why you have such a huge following. So transparency is part of what, and is part of changing consciousness. Because we are all complicit. Once we see our own complicity, we get power over the problem. Because the way you get power over a problem is to say, I'm responsible, so I'm going to change. What can I do? And that's why, Dave, in California, if you're banking at one of the big banks, I want you to walk your talk and pull your money.
Let's go to New Orleans. Drew, it's your turn. Go ahead, Drew. You're on.
Yes, appreciate it. First, a brief comment, taking the overview kind of on the track that you're on. Then I have a more direct question. We can slice and dice a little bit on regulation.
Sure.
Seems though, in the Western world now, we have a choice between the neoliberals and I think what used to be the Bilderberg Group morphing onto the G20. And then you have the neoconservatives who basically are picking up for the British Empire and trying to all these bases. And then I guess you have players who are involved in both of those. It's not really much of a choice, but I guess it's an agenda. And I guess I have to go with the neoliberals over the neoconservatives. But what I wanted to ask you is this. Is there a reason why we can't have in the FDA, in mining, in this oil industry, in the banking industry, instead of regulation, because technically if you think about a regulation, a regulator on a car opens and closes or whatever so that you open it up for capital and then you freeze it up when you need tighter rules, couldn't we simply have rules and have people in the rules who are not going to work for those industries later at all? Can't we simply come up with a different way, or does neither party, is there no one pulling the strings who really wants to see that?
Well, here's the problem, and it's a problem if you look at the structure of government or markets across different governments, and that is, where's the enforcement? If one group of people has powerful weapons, including invisible weaponry that's not commonly understood. If I have the power to control the weather or to induce earthquakes, then, you know, then who's going to say no to me, and how are they going to say no to me? So
that's right. And if you can knock out every launched missile with a laser, you become the toughie on the block.
Right. So who's going to enforce? And the question is, how do you get all the players to respect whatever set of rules you invent? And that's why I keep coming back to the money. If we could get very broad-based consciousness, first in individuals and households, but then work up to different pots of money like pension benefits, and because the money has a real incentive to have total wealth optimized. I mean, so take a look at what has happened in the Gulf. That's not optimizing anybody's wealth. You know, shareholders are losing 100 to 150 billion plus so far, but the Gulf Coast is going to lose trillions. And so nobody saved any money by not paying attention to regulation and not being lawful or ethical. I mean, if that operation had been run with integrity and competent, or without the economic warfare involved, if that's what it was, we would have saved trillions of dollars. So lots of money over long periods of time has reason to want to see the entire ecosystem optimized, because that produces the most wealth. And so to me, enforcement ultimately is going to have to come in very broad-based ways through the money, both consumers and institutions, and that can only happen with lots and lots of transparency. And, you know, but it starts with each one of us. If every person listening to this call woke up tomorrow and said, you know something, I'm pulling all my money out of the big banks, I'm pulling all my money out of any financial institution which I know has behaved in a way, you know, that I wouldn't want to be treated, it would put such shockwaves through the boards of America. That, you know, there's so many honest people up all the hierarchies at the banks and in government. I mean, the whole system is full of honest people who don't have a mechanism to enforcement. But if they can come to the table in a boardroom and say, you know, our consumers are going to pull their deposits, our depositors are going to pull their money if we behave like this, that's going to give the good guys power in the boardroom, and that's what we need.
All right, let's go to Charles in San Antonio, Texas. Welcome to the program, Charles, east of the Rockies. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening to both of you folks. I just wanted to ask your guest there, you know, I've heard so many good things in the last few years about that act called the Glass-Steagall Act that was done away with back in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't they just reinstitute Glass-Steagall instead of this 1,400-page monstrosity?
If they were serious, they would have. That was, you know, there are two things we needed. We needed to reinstate Glass-Steagall. We needed to do some serious derivatives, transparency, and regulation. And that was about all we needed to do, other than just enforce the laws that were already in the. I mean, this bubble happened because they didn't enforce the laws. Not only that, the federal regulators were used as the people who would target and destroy anybody who was standing, you know. I mean, the honest people got run out of HUD by the Department of Justice.
Well, you know, they showed on 60 Minutes that Larry Summers was one of the people instrumental in doing away with Glass-Steagall, or actually writing the language of the new law that did away with it, and now he's our top economic advisor.
Right. Well, because when you have, you know, crime pays. When you have a financial coup d'etat, the people who bring it off successfully are the one who get the positions.
Well, and look who he's working for, our president.
Right. So let's look at what's really going on. What's really going on is a group of people got together and shifted a tremendous amount of money out of the U.S. economy. And when it left the U.S., it was owned by one group of people. And when it showed up in Asia in the emerging markets, it was owned by somebody else. I mean, so what we've really watched is a financial coup d'etat, and the people who engineered it have been rewarded smartly.
Okay.
And this bill centralizes and gives more power to the people who engineered it.
Scottsdale, Arizona caller. First time. It's Chris's turn. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi there. I was doing an essay on manufacturing jobs going to China, and I came across an interesting document. It was the 2009 report to Congress on U.S.-Chinese trade.
Okay.
And something that really drives me nuts is you never hear anybody talking about, and I want to preface this by saying I know that, you know, China owns more U.S. Treasury bonds than even the Federal Reserve, but it just drives me nuts when you hear people talk about creating jobs and no one talks about the millions of manufacturing jobs that go to China where they pay them 60 cents an hour they imprison guys like Liu Xiaobo, you know, for standing up for democracy. He's like a human rights hero, you know, right, since way back in Tiananmen Square. You know, they're totally corrupt. They pay the average manufacturing worker $16 an hour. How is it not treason when there's a $268 billion deficit? How is it not treason when Article 1, Section 8 gives Congress the power to regulate foreign trade? Why is it not treason that they let this persist?
Oh, I think it is.
Jobs going to China. I mean,
I think it is. And let me make it worse. Let me use as an example. If you take the U.S. food stamp program, you know, in Tennessee, we have 20% plus of the population of Tennessee is on food stamps. We have tremendous amounts of farmland which is lying fallow. A lot of that food through the food stamps is being shipped in from Latin America, you know, far, far away. And if you look at the customer service and data servicing support jobs on the food stamp program, we are outsourcing them to India when we have counties that have 25% unemployment. Now, when you're paying people unemployment compensation, welfare, and food stamp and HUD subsidy money to not work, and you're shifting jobs to JP Morgan Chase over in India, you're paying double. In other words, you could pay the people you're paying unemployment and welfare to do those jobs instead of outsourcing them to India, and you would save money. So it's more expensive to outsource it, but we're doing it. And one of the reasons we're doing is that then buoys J.P. Morgan Chase's earnings, and their stock goes up.
Catherine, have you ever seen a time where more people are so uptight than ever before?
You know, at a really unsuccessful debutante party, that's the only time. But, people are about, it started in about 1996 when I realized suddenly people were stopped saying the expression, well, it's a free country. You notice no one says it anymore.
No, nobody says that anymore.
And it's funny because the blessing of me going through sort of the process that I went through is now I'm free. You know, I'm kind of free. I'm the one of the last people I know who says a lot, it's a free country.
Have you noticed, too, how people's driving has become more erratic because of all of this?
No, that I haven't.
It's a barometer. The worse the driving is, the more screwed up life is for people.
Well, I think people are under tremendous pressure, and the changes are very, very scary. I mean, I have the luxury as I wander around the world sort of understanding the system and why it's working the way it's working, and that's the advantage, frankly, George, that's the advantage of listening to Coast to Coast, is you get enough of an understanding that you can navigate, but a lot of people have no, you know, it's very Orwellian and it doesn't make sense.
Well, I got to tell you, Catherine, every time I go around the country at various speaking engagements and the coast-to-coast audience attends, I've got to tell you, they are so informed, so together.
Right, and they're much less tense.
True.
Because they have, you know, you go through a lot of grief when you decide to take the blue pill and leave the matrix. But once you do, you kind of see how things really work. And your anxiety levels go way down. You have to go through a grief period, but it really makes sense to take a look at what's really going on. So I just think people are under terrible stress. The other thing is there's a lot of effort to scare them or to make them think that they're powerless or there's no hope. And, you know, that's not the case. But, you know, the news is very dire, and I think all of us at some point just need to shut it up.
I'm telling you, people have not stopped getting punched since 9/11. And this has been going on for so many years now. I mean, they just continue to get hit with something different time and time again.
Well, you've got a parasite that's taking everything it can. And so it's going to keep taking until we organize and stop. And that's the question we all have.
All right, Catherine, thank you so much. Her website, Solari.com, where she blogs all the time. We'll be back.